Episode 238.
This is probably the 1%, right, that say, okay, at 28 years old, we're going to have another child. We got this much in the bank and our 401k and our career, and we got this, we got that. That's really the way you should expand to another location, is really make sure you have all your ducks in a row. But you and I have probably talked to shop owners that are still 20, 25 years into it, still waiting to get their ducks in a row before they expand. And there's some traits that I think go along with it. A, they're truly deep down, they're afraid of the risk. They're comfortable with what they have, but they want it, but they really don't know how to get it. And so they keep kind of dancing around. They're talking about it.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriotto here, and thank you for listening to the premier aftermarket podcast, Remarkable Results Radio. And welcome to episode 238 with Greg Bunch from Aspen Auto Clinic and Transformers Mastermind. There's an in-depth bio and talking points on Greg's own episodes page at remarkableresults.biz/E238. This episode is brought to you by Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus for serious technical training and support online, on-site, and on-demand. Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageGurus.com. I'm privileged every time I sit behind the mic. I'm excited and engaged over every interview because there is always something to learn from each interview. This episode is no exception. You trust me to bring you quality content, and this episode is no exception. I work hard to deliver on those expectations every week. Thanking my new Facebook friends, Paul Hero, Russell Hillard, and John St. Francis, and to my new LinkedIn connections, Kristen Brownell Battaglia, Dan Sullivan, and Anthony Henry. Don't hesitate to get on board to my LinkedIn or Facebook pages. I'm also on Twitter and Instagram and have my own YouTube channel where you can see every Academy lesson or hear every episode. Every link to my social accounts can be found at remarkableresults.biz/social. And one more thing, we're releasing every Academy episode as a podcast, so you'll be able to enjoy the great lessons from your industry colleagues while you're on the go. Find every Academy video and audio at remarkableresults.biz/learning. Now meet Greg Bunch from Aspen Auto Clinic in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Greg's been in the industry for 26 years and as a shop owner for the last 16. He is a multi-shop operator with 5 branches. Greg and I cover a lot of ground in this interview, and he was very forthcoming with his business strategies and the challenges along the way that have contributed to his ongoing remarkable results. Greg shares his very humble beginnings in his 2-car garage, the trials and tribs he went through with his first branch, some sound business principles he uses to prepare for his next branch, a recent move for his technicians that will help with retention, the huge number of hours his service advisors receive each year in training, his customer retention tactics, and the reason he started Transformer Mastermind for multi-store operators. Now, just in case you can't take notes while you're listening, I've summarized the key talking points on the show notes page. Now, listen to the interview. Here's Greg Bunch. Nice to be with Greg Bunch from Aspen Auto Clinic and Transformers Mastermind out there in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hey, Greg.
Good morning, Carm. Glad to be on board.
I am happy you are here. We've got so much to talk about. You know, when I think about your 5 branches, I know they didn't happen overnight.
Nope.
When I think about, you know, owning one and how tough that is, and, you know, you were probably a technician who became a shop owner.
Yes. Yep.
You went through that incredible metamorphosis.
Still going through it.
There's an honest answer. And to say one day, I am ready for my second store, my second branch. Why were you so sure and confident?
Ironically, I was very not confident at least in the second store. So, you know, we talked a little bit earlier. We both have kids. I've got four natural kids and 1 stepchild. I was not one of those guys that said, hey, I want to have so many kids. It was kind of life just happened and boom, now you got another kid. So it was kind of the same way with the shop. So I started literally in my 2-car garage. It was a detached garage. I walked out of my back door into my garage on September 1st, 2001 and said, wow, I am in business for myself. I can't believe it. No lift or anything like that. It was jack stands. And I had no idea what he was doing. But I had been a good technician. I still am an ASE Master L1 technician.
Congratulations on that.
I was a pretty good service writer, service manager. So I had my, you know, I could build estimates and sell the jobs like most, you know, pretty well. But the business side of it, I really didn't know what I was doing yet. So that's learning from Hard Knocks. So I was pretty successful. I got, you know, one shop up and running, and I was able to grow out of and that's a long story, but I was able to grow out of a little industrial condominium, got an SBA loan, got into, you know, built my own shop, had 8 bays, things were rocking and rolling. And actually right before the opportunity for the second shop came up, I had the best year ever, but come to find out the bookkeeper that I had embezzled. She got convicted for stealing $53,000. Looking back on it, it had to be $80,000. I mean, everything, she drained out the account. I mean, I was running on fumes by the time I find out how much money she had taken.
That makes your story even more incredible.
it was crazy. And she was like family. I mean, it was like you hear about the church secretary stealing. Mm-hmm. You know, how the church secretary, I mean, that's this gal was like family to mm-hmm. everybody in the shop. And come to find out, she had an online gambling problem. You know, she was a mother of 3 kids. It was just like unbelievable. So lesson number one, you know, keep an eye on your books. Don't have blind trust. So I think that all unraveled around January, February. And then in March, I get a phone call from a technician. And he said, hey, I'm looking for a job. I see that you guys work on Toyotas. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. I remember I was upstairs. I looked out my window. I had a little tree fort office in my first shop. And we were packed. I was like, oh man, I don't have room, but how do you turn down a technician that's calling, right? I mean, especially even worse now, but back then it was still tight to find technicians. So I said, well, tell me a little bit about yourself. And he said, well, the shop I'm working for is going out of business. And I said, well, what's the name of it? They told me the name. And I'm like, I've heard that name. That's a pretty good shop. What's going on? So I literally, as soon as I hung up, I Googled the number. I called them back. Got a hold of the wife. It was a husband and wife shop. Said, hey, I just got a call from one of your technicians. This is what he said. They go, yeah, he's right. And I said, well, can I come down and talk to you? And so I did. I went down and I thought, I'm going to buy some equipment. I'll buy their phone number, try to get their database, maybe an employee if it makes sense. So I'm working out of a 4,800 square foot shop. I go down there and it's like almost a 10,000 square foot shop. The front was awful. It was a greasy mess. They had an old broken down desk and carpet that was all natty and grease tracked. But holy crap, you go back and it was absolutely built by a technician. Epoxy floors, well lit, lifts, full equipment. I'm like, I can't let this just go to waste. And so I said, hey, what do you guys think about me buying the whole thing from you? And they're like, oh, would you do that? And I'm like, I'll consider it, because literally it was saving them from bankruptcy. So that was on a Tuesday. The following Tuesday, it was my business. I gave him $5,000 down, paid him $40,000 for the business over time, and I had two shops. So
I get it. Now, it's a great story. Thank you for telling me that, because it wasn't something in your strategic plan and it was well thought out. And you know, because what I was driving at is I was really going to ask you. So tell me, how well were your systems to be able to be scaled over a second branch? And it's a great story.
I was not. I did not. I mean, I had a pretty good service advisor at my one store. The guy that I'd hoped was going to run the second store ended up changing his mind to do that and moved to Hawaii. So just I had to promote the other service writer who wasn't very good. And it was a very, very difficult year. I learned trial by fire. I mean, it almost took me completely under, but looking back on it, it was a great learning lesson. I don't necessarily regret it. I would never advise, if somebody called me and said, hey, this is my situation, I would say, run. Gotta get your, you know, you got to be way more prepared for that. But, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. And that's really, you know, one thing I like bringing to the industry is, you know, if I could go back 15 years and have a meeting with myself and go, okay, this is your dream, this is what you want to do, let's walk through this. Let's put a plan together, because, or else it's going to be a pretty tough journey. And it's been a tough journey. Yeah, literally you know, my one shop started supporting the other one, and everybody argued, well, the demographics are here and there. And, you know, it was just about, and everything that they built that business on was price, price, price. And the guy, the owner was the master technician. So I can see why what happened is he hired three or four technicians that didn't know what they were doing. I ended up having to let them all go and replace them. I could absolutely see why he went out of business. You know, we had to raise the labor rate to even make any kind of profit there. We had to replace the technicians. We had to almost completely rebuild the database because he built, you know, I was built on value and being willing to charge, had a better warranty. They were all, you know, they were $15, $20 under what they should have been labor rate wise. So, you know, the business models didn't match. So converting his business into my business model, it was almost like I just went in and rented a building.
The call that you got from the technician, did you hire him?
He stayed on at the other shop.
Okay.
For a while. And he had his issues, and we ended up, you know, probably 6 months into it having to let him go. But yeah, he did stay on for a little bit.
So you learned so much of how not to do something in 1 week.
Yes.
Oh my. I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So you have this van, and it's the Guru on the Go van, and it's all nicely decked out, and you drop by for lunches and learns. How do shops get a chance to get that van to come to their place?
Well, they can, of course, call into our Guru hotline and request it. They can talk to their parts distributor, you know, and through that channel, we can go out and do some training, or even with us out in the field. You know, if they see us, we do various warehouse distributor type shows, many different events. We're out there everywhere. Just come by and ask, and we'll be more than happy to come by.
Hey, Mike, if I said you were a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, would I be right?
You betcha.
So give me an example.
I live, eat, breathe Federal Mogul on a daily basis. You know, growing up, being in the racing industry, I knew a lot about Moog. I loved Moog. Felpro, same thing. To go out and be able to talk about a company this big, this strong, it makes me happy every single day. I'm so excited to do it on a day in and day out basis.
What are technicians saying after you're done with your presentation?
When can you come back? They want more day in and day out.
They want more, and you have more to give. You've got so many key product lines in the industry.
Oh, we have a ton of product lines and a ton of training that's available, you know, with those product lines and on a technical side too.
How dazzled are the techs to see that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
They come unglued. They are so excited about that because less frustrations. You know, they've been dealing with issues in the field of damaging that boot during installation, and it makes it so much easier to put in. And it's a beautiful piece.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. I guess where I'm driving is, you know, because there's a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of service professionals that they're happy with their single place, but there's a lot of them that want to expand. And I continue to interview a lot of great multi-shop owners, and they've got it down, and they're going, you know, five, right. Six, seven. What was the drive to go to three, and were you prepared smarter than? I'm looking for you to share maybe a couple of strong principles on when you know, when you really know how to expand or when to expand.
Going back to my talk about kids, you know, it's some people are like they absolutely, this is probably the 1%, right, that say, okay, at 28 years old, we're going to have another child, and we got this much in the bank and our 401k and our career, and we got this, we got that. That's really the way you should expand to another location, is really make sure you have all your ducks in a row. But you and I have probably talked to shop owners that are still 20, 25 years into it, still waiting to get their ducks in a row before they expand. And there's some traits that I think go along with it. A, they're truly deep down, they're afraid of the risk. They're comfortable with what they have, but they want it, but they really don't know how to get it. And so they keep kind of dancing around. They're talking about it. And, you know, I've been in multiple 20 groups, and, you know, the guy that, well, I'm going to start a second shop, you know, 10 years later, well, I'm still working on it. Like, well, if you really wanted to do it, you would make it happen. But there are some sound business principles that go into expanding and, you know, having systems and processes that are documented, a training system so that you have consistency between your places, and having having the staff to go into a second location that knows what they're doing. So when we look to expand now, and we learn this the hard way, you know, you got to put people, you got to overstaff. You have to have people working with your successful people for a fair amount of time, 3 to 6 months, maybe even a year, so that they truly know and are integrated into the way you do things before you just throw them into another store. And I'll give you an example. When we opened one of the stores in Denver, we'd found a good candidate. And again, back to my fault, I negotiated like 3 months rent. The shop was beautiful. It was all decked out. I was ready to rock and roll. Well, you know, this manager only got to work with my team for about a month, and we had some concerns, but we're like, you know, it was me. I was like, oh, I got to get this open. I got to get it open. You know, we're in summertime. I'll, you know, make money while we can. And it was just too early. And so the technicians ate his lunch. He had come from the lube industry. He didn't know completely about full service. He was a great guy, but just they ate his lunch. And so when you lose respect within the shop, there was no way to get it back. So we ended up parting ways, and then it became a downhill spiral because whoever we put in there before, because the shop's an hour and 20 minutes away from all my other ones, I didn't have the luxury of having somebody work for me for 3 months and really understand our system and then go run it. It was like, all right, next, next, next. And that's the shop that we ended up selling because we never could get really what we call an Aspenized manager to run the shop for us. It became whatever shop they had, you know, or wherever they worked before. At a dealership, they ran it like that. If they ran a Firestone, they ran it like that. And we run our company differently. And so to kind of train remotely in the trenches, you know, we'd spend a week with them, but it just was not enough time. So, you know, when somebody is looking to expand, that's my first advice. Yes, it's going to cost you some money in payroll, but overstaff, you know, bring in that manager, that service advisor, and let them work with your team so they truly get into your culture and know what your expectations are before you open that other shop.
I love it. Aspenize. We've got to Aspen. I love that. That is just a great, culture piece, right?
Right.
We need to Aspenize our new recruits. So do you always have a target location? Are you starting from scratch? Has your strategy been to buy other businesses?
That's a great question. So when we moved to the Denver market, we opened 2 stores in the same year. Don't recommend that. Unless you could, if I could have taken the same amount of money and found 2 shops that were for sale or 2 owners that wanted to retire that already had a database, had some employees, I think that would have been easier. Probably 3 would have been better. That way I could have hired a district manager or promoted somebody from my company to watch over those 3. In Colorado Springs, we're pretty well known. When we open another shop, we already have, you know, a percentage of people that it's going to be closer to their house that already know and love and trust us. They're just happy that there's one closer to their house. But up there, we were an unknown quantity. People did not, you know, Colorado Springs is kind of like the little sister to Denver. They're like, oh, a Colorado Springs company? Who are you, right? If a Denver company comes to Colorado Springs, it's like, oh, Big Brother's here.
I see.
And so it took a tremendous amount of hundreds of thousands of dollars in marketing that was not yielding the same kind of results. And it took a long time to build those customer bases that seemed to happen at store number 3 and 4 almost overnight. I mean, we, you know, both shops 3 and 4 were doing well over $100,000 within 90 days. We just exploded when we opened. I thought, well, shoot, I could do this anywhere. But the Denver market definitely taught us some important lessons. So getting back to your question, it depends. Right now, I am looking. There's a community outside of Colorado Springs. They have about 15,000 rooftops. There isn't anything to buy, and there's really only one and a half players out there. And so there, we've purchased a piece of property. We're looking at building a shop. Now, what I'm also finding out is I've got 3 or 4 big boxes that are looking and trying to move into that market too. So just because there is nothing out there, I got a really good piece of property that I could build something on out there. There's another part of town where I know that I've got to buy something in order to penetrate the market. There's too many embedded shops and dealerships around. And there is a shop that's for sale. And so I'm looking at that because I don't want to start from scratch there. I think it would be too expensive.
So I think what I hear you saying, that you've had a great success turning around an existing business, or at least the risk is less.
Right. Well, two different shops. So the shop I took over was in its death blows, which is why I picked it up for virtually nothing. This other shop I'm looking at is a profitable, well-run shop with a great customer base and a good manager and some good technicians. And if the deal closes, I'm going to have to pay top dollar for that reason.
You have told me that you pride yourself on having higher end clients.
Right.
Is that a greater challenge to be able to weed out or find the right customer that understands how to be Aspenized?
Absolutely. And that's why if you looked at my stores on a map, now I do have one that's in a lower demographic because when I built that store, that's the one that I got the SBA loan and opened, I had no idea what demographics were. I mean, my first shop was literally in the most ghetto part of Colorado Springs, and I made it work. So I thought, well, people drive from all over the city, who cares? And when I moved from that location to the location I've got now, it was definitely a better location, but I still had people driving from everywhere. But it was still not in a great demographic. So as I learned through multiple channels here and understanding demographics, so when I look at a store now, that's the first thing I look at is, do the demographics support my business model? Somebody told me one time, the worst thing owners do sometimes is try and put a shop close to their house, and that may be the worst location. So, you know, I'm looking for higher demographic, you know, that 70, 80,000 median income, where I know that people can afford the services that I provide. And there's a lot of shops that are not in that demographic that, you know, we've had the thought, okay, do we have a discount model that we can buy up some of these shops and run it under a different brand because our shop would not fit in a low income demographic.
Got it. Hey, thanks for all this incredibly great information. You're so forthcoming with it. In your business profile, you mentioned that you have 25 technicians. Is there a technician shortage?
It's an epidemic problem. I was on a phone call. It was some research firm out of New York, and that was the discussion. And they had dealerships on there. They had some multi-store guys on there. And I think overall, an independent shop is a better place to work than a dealership, which is why I think you get a lot of guys that get some training and get experience at a dealership, but then end up at a independent shop. Some guys are dealership guys for life. You know, they learn one or two car lines and they're comfortable with that, and they never want to leave it. There is absolutely a shortage. And probably 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, the big push that, at least in the circles I was in, was, you know, extended hours and open Saturdays and open Sundays. And, you know, you got to be convenient, which I believe in being convenient. But I think what everybody's found is technicians, good technicians, do not want to work those kind of hours. And if they do, they don't want to do it for long. I mean, the first shop that I worked at, Colorado Springs, I had a day off during the middle of the week. And I'm like, I can't do this forever, because you feel like you never really have a day off. You got to come in, finish up the night before. So we actually, just this Saturday, will be the first Saturday that we close all of our stores for our technicians. Now, we'll have a service rider there till noon to take in and drop off customers. But we've put all our technicians Monday through Friday. And that's, I want my people to have a quality life, but also to offset the epidemic shortage of good technicians, because we've not been able to hire a lot of them because they want a Monday through Friday schedule.
So I see that you are open Monday through Saturday, but Saturday is only going to be a limited staff.
Correct. And that's literally, you know, cross my fingers, as of this Saturday, this coming Saturday.
Training for your technicians, for your service writers. I noticed that you provide, or I guess maybe even require, more training hours for your service advisors than your technicians.
I wondered if you were going to pick up on that.
Thank you. I saw that. So obviously my question is, that darn service advisor's position is so important.
Absolutely. So we have a pretty unique situation. I have an employee on staff, and his primary job is to train service advisors and train managers. So back in the day, we'd hire somebody, we'd put them on the counter. It was either a sink or swim. And we'd tell them a little bit about the way we want things done, but we didn't have anything formalized. And so, you know, either you got lucky and they knew how to sell. You had the situation where, wow, they could sell so much that now you're upsetting customers because they're too aggressive. You got people that are super nice, but, you know, can't sell out of a paper bag, but everybody loves them. I mean, we went through the whole gamut of different personalities and different people, but without any kind of consistent sales system. So probably about 4 years ago, we really started honing in on, we have to develop a sales system for Aspen. What does that look like? How to answer the phone? You know, and we got on board early about not giving prices over the phone. And that's something you either do really well and you get people in the door, or you do really bad and you upset a lot of people and you get them hanging up on you and never calling you back. So we worked on getting a system for that. And then we'd listen to phone calls, and then we'd role play with our advisors. And so out of that, we have about 40 hours of curriculum. So let's say, Carm, that you came to work for me as a service advisor. The first couple of days, you are going to be at the counter, listening, observing, asking questions, getting to know the staff, you know, the manager, the other service advisors begin to show you how the computer works, build estimates, but you're not really engaging with the customers yet. So then we bring you in, we do a full day training, and that's kind of who Aspen is, why we do what we do, why we do things differently than everybody else. And then we start getting into how we and so we'll go through a phone class, kind of the basics. Then they go back to the shop, they work a couple more days, maybe a week, then they come back for another full day. And anyway, we go through, by the time they're done, they have about 40 hours worth of training that goes into them. And then we do follow-up. So we listen to their phone calls, we'll bring them in or coach them. Hey, you know, here's where you lost that phone call. Here's what you could have done differently. Here was a great phone call, you know, that turned into a $1,500 job. Great job. You know, you got to be positive and negative for them to learn. Mm-hmm. And then like we just ran all of our service advisors through the whole program again. So we've had ones that have been with us 5 or 6 years, some that's been with us 6 months. We didn't care. I said, I want everybody, the managers and the service advisors, all ran through our complete training program once again, because like anything, we default to the way we used to do it, or we get lazy. And so it really is important to me that we have consistency across the board, that people are practicing and following the system that we've developed, because we know it works. And the closer they follow the Aspen way, the better success they're going to have.
This trainer has paid for him or herself many times
Absolutely. Over.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And in fact, we're getting people that want his services for their shops because they've seen the difference.
You know, that was the thought that I had as you were saying, wow, this Greg's got his own trainer. And that reflects to me that you have the scale to afford that person. It's almost like I can't afford not to have that person.
Right. You know, and I wrote an article recently about that. Like, too many shop owners, you know, face it, a lot of shop owners come, they were technicians, they were service writers, they were service managers. Maybe they inherited the business from their family. But you know, a lot of these guys went from, if they're successful, from making $60,000, $80,000, maybe $100,000 a year in their trade, and now they're shop owners and they're making $200,000 a year, and they buy a new house and they get a boat and they buy toys. Well, the problem with that is, and it's kind of a crude term, but they've eaten their seed. So they don't have that capital to invest back in their company. And somebody told me a long time ago that Toyota was really big on this, where, you know, they don't take a lot of profits out of it. They continue to reinvest. And over the last 3 years, you know, Toyota used to be a joke, right? When they first came to America, they were garbage and nobody, Japanese car, what? Now they're, you know, now they lead the pack. So I've always kind of taken that philosophy, take out what you need to live off of and reinvest the rest back into your business. So if I didn't have that philosophy, I couldn't have afforded this person, because, you know, there were times that it definitely took a lot of the profit that could have been me buying a boat or a cabin or whatever, but I invested it into people knowing that I wanted to grow and that my payoff is down the road.
Is there a number, Greg, that you would say, listen, you should invest X amount of percent of your net operating profit back into the business or into reserves?
I guess I look at it kind of backwards. I'd say, look, be realistic about what you can live off of and be conservative. You know, do you really need all that stuff or is it just going to be more of a distraction? And, you know, I've talked to shop owners and they're like, you know what? I'm not willing to do that. I want to spend everything I make and that's why I'm doing this. And they're okay that they're never going to be able to grow past where they're at. Other ones say, you know what? You're right. I can absolutely live very comfortably on $100,000 a year. I'm making 200, you know, I can, you know, after taxes, I can put 40, 50 away into savings. I can invest 40, 50 into a training program, knowing that that may mean I make 250 the year after that.
Or
a couple of years down the road. So I'm a big believer that you've got to reinvest in your people. Have I lost that bet? Have I trained people and had people flake out? Absolutely. And it's hard. But there's a saying out there, the only thing worse than not training your, let's say having trained people and leave is not training your people.
And they stay. Yeah, I know.
And they stay.
Exactly. I know. I think about your success and I think about some of the things you were saying about your acquisition strategy. And then I think about the industry's consolidation moves. And
right.
I just read about another, if you will, quote unquote, big box buying a single location operation in a town.
Wow.
You must be one heck of an acquisition target of a big box. Do you ever think about that?
I do. And I had one approach me probably 3 years ago. And they made some big promises of what they could do. And it was tempting. When somebody tells you they're going to give you enough money that you never have to work a day in your life again, it gets you thinking, right? But like all of us, especially the people listening to this, we really don't know what it's like not to work. I mean, this industry is not a 40-hour week. It's not the proverbial, you know, Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week, which nobody, you know, he doesn't work 4 hours a week. But this is a long hour, grinded out kind of business. So when you get somebody teasing you like that, it gets your attention. But I really, you know, when the rubber hit the road, they weren't going to come anywhere near what I thought it was worth. And I really wasn't in a position, you know, to leave the industry yet. I felt like, you know, I'm not done running this race. I think I can take this thing a lot further down the road. So will that happen eventually? Are they going to keep knocking on the door? Absolutely, especially the bigger you get.
Yeah. Put your vision cap on for me right now. Any tech advances that could disrupt your business or the industry in the next 5 to 10 years?
Boy, there's a lot of discussion about that one, isn't there? The self-driving cars and telematics and everything like that. And here's, I don't want to have my head in the sand for sure. And I probably need to spend more time kind of studying and seeing what's going on out there. But if I walk the lot of a car dealership today, I'm finding 97% of them are the regular internal combustion, the customer has to drive the car. The person has to drive the car. They're not self-driving yet. So, and as we know, the average age of the car on the road today is 12 years. So I look and go, well, if they're still selling all these cars, that means for the next 12 years, that's what's going to be on the road. Now, the way technology is changing and things are moving fast, I certainly, you know, I think in the next 5 or 6 years, if we don't start adapting to what's going on out there, we're going to be in trouble. But as of today, yes, I think we need to be cognizant and aware of what's going on out there, but I don't think we need to necessarily go and drastically change our business models. I think cars are still, you know, the internal combustion engine is still out there. They're still braking, you know, and to people talk about it, that there was a period when, you know, especially after the Great Recession, the car manufacturers were trying to cut costs and sell a less expensive car. Well, in turn, that means those cars were not built to the same quality standards, which means there's more work in our shops.
How true. Customers, high-end customers. And what are you doing to recruit, find, get, retain your customer base?
That's a great question. A lot of things. We have a very strong digital presence. We invest a lot of money into having a very, very high-end website, a very attractive website. We do, you know, probably what everybody else does. We do the Google AdWords. We do social media advertising. And we're kind of old school. We still do a lot of direct mail. And we do a very classy piece. And we do offer, they're not like some of the chains do, but our oil change is not overly expensive. And so that does draw in a certain amount of people. And you do have to filter through. Some people are only there for the inexpensive oil change. But again, going back to our training system, we have worked out a training system of how to convert those people into really good customers. And I think that's one of my secret sauces that very few people in the industry know how to do. But, you know, if a guy makes $100,000 a year, and he brings in a coupon for a 20-25 change, that doesn't mean he's cheap. He's just taking advantage of a good deal. And if we can talk to him and show him our shop and introduce him to the technician working on his car, really do a good job, he's going to choose us to be his mechanic. So targeting high income households with our direct mail is probably how we're getting to the right customer. We don't just send it out to anybody and everybody. We are definitely very picky on the demographics that we do our marketing to. And the other part of it is our direct mail is different, that we're targeting people that own specific cars. So we just don't do a generic postcard like a lot of people out there doing. We will target, and we have a program that we can use to do this, and it's pretty unique. It's called a variable image, variable data card. So if you drive a Toyota, we're going to send a postcard to your house and say, hey, Carm, are you looking for a great Toyota technician in your neighborhood? Here we are. And then your neighbor drives a Subaru, and it'll say, hey, John, are you looking for a great Subaru mechanic in your neighborhood? Here we are. The next neighbor has a BMW, and so forth. So we use full throttle direct mail, and they have a pretty unique product that can target people based on what they drive. And we get a much higher response rate with that than we did with the generic. I mean, we've done, you know, the generic mail postcard that, you know, a lot of guys out there do, but that's definitely a tool of the trade that we've been using.
I agree with you. It's like you're talking to me, you know, when you get that piece of mail. I have a million questions, a million, that not only did I prepare, but that are going through my mind that I just love to ask you, but I really want to get into the Transformer Mastermind with you for a little bit.
Sure.
And the last time we chatted, you said, Carm, our mission is to change how auto service is seen by the public and to attract smart and talented people to the industry. And that's right. The reason that you started this.
Right. So I've been through, probably like most of your guests, you know, I've been through the big box training programs. I've been through the boutique service advisor training classes. I've been through, I won't name names, but I've been through a lot of stuff. And what I found in that is they were great to build a foundation, to build a good single store location, systems, processes, understanding your financials, some basics on, you know, how to treat customers and customer service. And a lot of really great stuff is out there. But what I found is a few of us, and this isn't to be prideful, it's just a reality, outgrew that information. We got our stores dialed in, and okay, now what? Now we want to have a second location. Who do we talk to? What's out there? What resources do we have? And it was kind of learn as you go, learn the hard way, gather nuggets where you can, but nobody really focused on helping out the guy that wants to go from one store to two, or he's got five stores and he's struggling. You know, you'd see these guys in some of these groups, and they're just like, they're just dealing with different issues than the single store guy. So it's not that one's better than the other, it's just different. I've been involved in a mastermind group myself for the last 5 years, but it's all other industries. So we get, you know, successful business people from every gamut. And so I learned a lot from them. And basically the format of that, we meet monthly, and it was like, okay, Carm, you get 20 minutes. The floor is yours. Whatever brain picking you want to do, if you want us to, you know, look at your marketing pieces, you know, you want to survey us, you want to say, how did you guys accomplish this or whatever. And so a lot of really great brainstorming went on in this. And really, that's the format of that meeting. And I realized, A, there's nothing, the automotive industry doesn't do that because you've got guys, everybody's about teaching their business model. So any of these groups I've ever been to, it's all about their way. They know the best way. It's all about car count. It's all about average repair order. It's all about margins. It's all about, you know, working on European cars, whatever it is. Everybody, all these facilitators are all about teaching their own model. It's not about perfecting your own model, right? And so I've always told my staff, it's like, well, I want the best of everything. And so to me, that's what I've gained out of these groups. I don't follow any one person's or one company's model, business model. I've taken, gleaned from all these guys and made my own. And I think that's what we have to do. So getting back to your, sorry, a long-winded answer here. I probably 2 years ago, I was like, I really want to put something together for multiple store guys, guys that are doing work right. They want to transform our industry. They want to transform their communities. They really want to do this right. So there's guys out there that are, the only reason they want to have multiple stores is straight greed, and they don't care what they do to their customers. Those are not the people I want to talk to. I want to talk to people that really have a heart for this industry and growing. So at the beginning of the year, I worked all my contacts. You know, I'm a advisory board, a Ratchet Ranch, talked to them, talked to my contacts at Worldpac and Advance and Factory Motor Parts and all these people, and kind of gathered who they believe the best of the best multiple store owners are, called them, emailed them, mailed them. Those guys are hard to get a hold of, by the way. I don't know if you've found that.
I understand, yes.
And began to develop and put together this mastermind group. And it's been really, really neat. We limit it to 12. We do have a few openings right now, but I don't want this to be a group of 30 guys. And if I get that much demand, then I'll make two groups, because I want, just like the meeting that I go to, I want it to be where, Carm, you come and you get an hour of time and we talk about whatever you're going through, whether that's an acquisition, whether that's a new build, whether you're dealing with insurance issues, staffing issues. You know, do you lost a district manager? Do you promote a guy? Do you hire somebody from the outside? You need to develop a training system. What KPI system do you use to measure and compare all of your stores? Whatever your issue is, we put 100% of effort towards helping you. Then we take a break. Then we go to the next guy. And then we take a break. We go to the next guy. Now we do weave in some industry experts. We do some training. But again, it's not, I tell everybody, A, there's no sales pitches allowed, and B, there's no one business model that we say is the right way to do business. You take what you hear throughout the room, and you take it back and bring it to your own shop. So that's been extremely refreshing to the people that are in the meetings. And I also tell them, look, this group is to be around higher level operators, and I don't think you need us. We don't have a financial composite, and that's on purpose, because by the time you get to that level, you probably have a pretty good idea what your KPIs, you probably have an internal system that you're measuring, and if somebody needs help, we're there, but that's not a focus. We're not comparing numbers. We don't do, you know, the dollar time idea. We don't actually do shop visits, which is a little bit different from almost all the groups, because now if somebody wants it and that comes up, well, we can absolutely do that. But again, I was talking to a shop owner yesterday. I said, you probably don't need 35 people getting off a bus to tell you that your lights are out in your bathroom. And he started laughing. He goes, did you read my report? Because it just gets a little crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So this mastermind is a monthly meet. Is it a virtual video meet?
It is a quarterly meeting.
In person?
In person.
Okay.
For this year, and this could change for next year, I've got some different ideas going for next year. But this year we met at a 5-star resort in Colorado Springs. And it was, you know, 5-star food, 5-star room. It's at a resort where they can do golf and a pool and a workout room. And it's a beautiful, beautiful facility. And I wanted it to be that way on purpose because, A, these guys work really, really hard. So, hey, why don't you take 2 days off for the meeting and your brain's going to hurt, but take a couple extra days on the beginning and before or after, bring your wife out and enjoy everything that Colorado has to offer and make a little mini vacation getaway at the same time. And a lot of guys have taken advantage of that. Some guys are, you know, they're just all about work. They come in, they do the meeting, they leave. Other ones have actually, you know, they go skiing in the winter and go hiking and mountain biking and sightseeing and everything in the summer. So for now, it's in Colorado Springs at a 5-star resort 4 times a year.
So you're happy with starting this group, and is it for you doing what you expected it to do?
I would say for the most part, I've had a few bumps in the road. It's just like with our customers at our auto repair shops, it's our job to bring value for what we charge. And so, I've gotten some good feedback on what I need to be doing to make sure that everybody's getting value out of the meetings. The meetings are truly next level. Almost everybody has said, out of everything they've ever been to the industry, this is one of the most dynamic meetings they've ever been to. But I need to do more in between meetings. I've got to keep a little bit more connection between everybody. So if I had any lessons that I've learned doing this for this year, it's that, the meetings are phenomenal, but we need to do a little bit more in between the meetings to keep everybody connected, keep some good content out there, a lot of good things to discussion points and be able to help people. And that's one thing I plan on doing next year as I'm moving forward, is everybody that's in the group, I'm going to go visit and spend a day and a half at their shop and just see if there's any way that I can help them, be available on the phone, start showing them more of what we do internally, our training systems, our accounting system, things that we've learned throughout the years that have improved our business.
This sounds like your passion.
It is. As you know, it's extremely rewarding to help really good people succeed and to see their visions fulfilled and to kind of stretch and grow. I mean, like I have. I if you would have interviewed me 15 years ago and you said, "Hey, Greg, I looked in this time machine and you're not going to believe it. You're going to have 5 or 6 shops and you're going to have this and that and this mastermind group." I'd been like, "You're crazy. I just want my one little shop. I can't even fathom, right, what you're talking about." But I have evolved as a leader. I've evolved as a business person. I avidly study what it means to be a good leader, a good business person, and have grown it. And I want to be able to pass that on. I want to see these smart, young, fired up individuals be successful in what they want to do. And it's really a lot of fun. And I've got a guy that I think he's 30 or 32. He's opening up his second shop any day now. He's already got the property bought for his third shop and he's just rocking and rolling. So it's just super exciting to see what's going on. And these are the guys that we have to get behind because they're going to buy out all these other guys that are retiring. And we can really do a good transition if we're all working together.
Now that is a very forward thinking statement. Thank you. Thank you for that. Hey, Greg, something about you that no one knows.
I don't know. I'm a pretty open book. I don't know if there's,
all right.
There's a lot of that. Back in the day, would get mad at God, back as a kid in grade school. And I was literally the redheaded, freckle faced, kid that got picked on a lot. And, my dad managed an egg ranch. So that always got thrown in there, making fun of what my dad did for a living. I was that skinny, scrawny, afraid of my own shadow kid. So looking back on it, I think that's having to overcome that and become who I am today and understanding who God's made me to be has been a long journey. But I would think if somebody met me now, they'd be like, "What? No, that wasn't you." But I really have to say that's something that has helped me be who I am today. So looking back on it, I probably wouldn't change it. But at the time, it was a living hell some days.
Pretty tough, yeah, I bet you. Thank you for being so darn honest. You mentioned Tim Ferriss a little bit ago. I have a Tim Ferriss question for you. What topic would you speak about if you were asked to give a TED Talk?
Ooh, man, you got good questions here. I don't know if they would let me talk about it, but I think if I had that global of an audience, I think I would try and mend some damage between the automotive repair industry and the general public and try and bring an understanding to the general public of what goes on behind the scenes, that a lot of the perception of I get ripped off or they charge too much is really based around miscommunication, misinformation. I think, are there crooks in our industry? Absolutely. And I think there's probably with the advent of Yelp and Google and all the reviews, and it's more transparent than ever before, which is a good thing. But, you know, I remember watching the exposés even before I got in the industry, you know, they're spray painting the timing belt and, you know, crazy stuff they'd have hidden cameras doing. So, we've put our own black mark. We've given ourselves our own black eye. I don't blame necessarily society for the way they see the auto repair industry. I blame the auto repair industry. But it's also our job to change it. So trying to build that bridge and having the community understand what it takes nowadays to be a really good technician, and that most owners out there will give you the shirt off their back, and probably to a fault are out there trying to help their customers. And you know, one thing I learned at one of these big box training programs is, you know, the best thing you can do is get the owner off the counter because he gives away too much. Well, we give away too much because we've got big hearts and we want to help people, which is why we do this. And so when there's, you know, I just read something, they charged me $99 to diagnose my car. And it's like, well, yeah, they gave you a deal. Do you know what went into that $99 for them to be able to diagnose your car? So that just tells me there's still a pretty big gap, and I would try and help people understand the differences.
Greg, a quote you live by or think about often?
Probably two things, and I got to credit Richard Flint for this. I don't know if you've ever talked to him, but he's an incredible guy.
Absolutely, I've heard him speak.
But behavior never lies is a big one. So, you know, you and I, we've heard a lot of people talk, but then you look at their behavior and go, okay, I see what's really going on behind the scenes here. And to a version of that, you know, inspect what you expect, that it's important that you set expectations and then you follow up and make sure that people are following those expectations. And, you know, I know this is going out to the public. I was going to say between you and I, but I know it's going to go public. And that's the part I'm working on is, you know, I'm really good at setting the expectations and people know that I have very high standards. I'm not great at going behind and making sure that my way is being done every single time. And so that's something I'm growing as a leader. And my team is helping me with of going, okay, we have a system that works. Let's make sure it's being followed.
Would you come back?
To the show?
To the show.
Of course.
Spread some more of your wisdom?
I would love to.
I so enjoyed this. I'm going to give you a secret about this interview. I had all these great questions, and you actually formed them and said them without even me asking them. So, you know, I just loved sitting back and listening and just checking off my list. Well, he covered that and he covered that and he covered that. So thanks so much for being on.
No problem. I'm going to be, they've given me an hour on the stage at the Ratchet Wrench Conference. So I'll put a plug in to come, you know, come meet me there. I'd love to meet our audience and talk to them and answer any questions we have there. I'm trying to figure out how the heck am I going to talk about strategy and growth in an hour. So that's going to be a challenge on my part because it's something that just bubbles out of me. I could get on stage and talk for 4 or 5 hours because there's so much to it.
So here's what you do. You do what you think you can fit in the hour, and then you tell them to just go listen to my podcast with Carm.
There you go.
And get some more. And get some more. Absolutely. Greg Bunch.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me on. This has truly, truly been an honor, and I absolutely love what you're doing for our industry, and you're a transformer too. You're helping bring our industry to the next level, and that's what we have to do. So thank you.
Thank you. Hey, aftermarketers, thanks for joining us. Greg Bunch did provide a wealth of information and powerful nuggets of wisdom for you to chew on. So will you write down some of these ideas and implement? I hope you will. It would be great to know that this interview and the 237 previous provide that continual learning curve for you, and you become an implementer because of the ideas, insights, and best practices served up for you right here on the Remarkable Results Radio Podcast. I'm a happy camper to know that you benefit from this platform of knowledge. Let me know how it works for you. Email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz. Hey, there's one more thing. Find the show notes page for Greg Bunch at remarkableresults.biz/E238. Hey, thanks for your support and listenership. Until next time.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.